Good morning. It is 9:10 a.m. We are here today, May 8, 2017, in the OPA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Agaña, Guam, for the formal hearing of OPA PA 17-001, Cortec International Corp. versus the Department of Public Works. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Rodalyn Gerardo and Thirza Bagana. Will appellant, Cortec, please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record.
Good morning. Joyce Tang for Cortec. With me is Cortec's institutional representative, Mr. Ho Yun. Ms. Travis will be arriving just a little in about another 5-10 minutes, but we're going to proceed. Thank you.
Will Purchasing Agency, DPW, please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record.
Yeah, Assistant Attorney General's Tom Keeler, Shannon Titano, on behalf of the Department of Public Works, which is represented by its deputy, Felix Benavente.
Thank you.
Before also, I'd like to acknowledge the presence of Senator Tom Adda. He has jurisdiction over procurement. So thank you again, Senator Adda.
Before we went on the record, I had a brief conversation with the counsel for the parties concerning the appellant's exhibit binder, which was I found to be non-compliant with the hearing officer's April 4th, 2017 scheduling order, in that she did not properly mark each exhibit with sequential numbers. Minor issue, and Ms. Tang had stated we gave the binders back, but I also told her that I would allow them once that oversight was corrected. Ms. Tang said that she would correct it. And is that a fair summary of our off-the-record discussion?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Keeler?
No objections. No
okay.
Comments.
So are there any other preliminary issues before we begin?
No.
Mr. Keeler?
No.
Okay, so pursuant to the scheduling order in this case, we are going to proceed with the opening statement of the parties. The appellant's case in chief, that will be followed by the purchasing agency's case in chief. There is no interested party that entered into these proceedings. Then we will end with the closing statements of the parties. Are there any questions about that order of march, parties? From any of the parties?
None.
All right, so Ms. Tang, you have the floor for your opening statement on behalf of the appellant.
Thank you. You may sit if you want to. Thank you. But I usually stand and I feel comfortable, but thank you. Good morning. Thank you for, we appreciate the public auditor and the hearing officer for expediting the process and granting this final hearing. I think that this is important in the process of reviewing procurements. That is the process of getting the facts, and I think that's very important. And we appreciate your patience and accommodation. This Cortec filed a protest to the RFP that was filed on January 25th, 2017. This is after a November decision was issued, which listed numerous violations of the last RFP that was issued by DPW for Simon Sanchez procurement and the 34 schools. Now, you would think that in this procurement that many of the issues would clear up, and that if there were issues that were brought to DPW's attention for clarification or correction, they would be willing and open to examining those issues. And we did not find that to be the case, unfortunately, hence this appeal. In our appeal, we raised two issues. In the protest, we raised two issues. The first issue was the issue of whether best value should be considered and factored in the valuation process. DPW did not grudgingly conceded that, yes, we're going to include best value as a factor, but only because of delay issues, not because the law requires so. That is significant because it shows yet an agency which is not following the law. It's pretty clear what the law says. The second issue.
Ms. Tang, we're just going through what you think the evidence will show in your opening statement. We'll have the opportunity to make a closing statement at the end of the proceedings. Please proceed.
Thank you. The second issue that was raised in a protest, which was appealed, is the issue of whether the public law 32.121, which has been codified as 5 GCA 58E, that has to do with the 34 schools, again, 58D was Simon Sanchez, 32.120, public law 32.120. So what we raised as the second issue, and we appealed the second issue of our protest. On appeal, we said, look, there's a problem here. What are the problems? One, the two public laws, 58D and 58E, cannot be solicited or procured together. That's pretty clear in the law, in the enabling legislation. The second issue is, whether you call it piggybacking or combining or whatever, the 58E, which has to do with the 34 schools, has certain limitations and restrictions on what services and items you can procure. They're not identical to 58D for Simon Sanchez. So what is authorized in 58E is not the same kind of services that are authorized for Simon Sanchez. Not only are you not allowed to combine the two, but you can't procure these services, whether you piggyback it or do it in a separate procurement. The issue of the separate procurement for two procurements is one issue that's on appeal. Other issues on appeal, in Cortex appeal, are the violations in the current RFP with respect to 5080, the 34 schools. What DPW, an agency, is allowed to procure under that statute. And we enumerate a couple of them in our appeal. We talk about the program study, the CCIP. We talk about insurance. We talk about capital, the maintenance. So these are the type of services that CORTEC, in its appeal, has stated is not allowed under 58E. But for Simon Sanchez, it is. So very quickly, recognizing the decision, and it was the correct decision on the motion to dismiss. We appreciate that because it kind of clarifies the issue, so I will deal with it very quickly. The issue of mootness, I think, has been resolved because in the public auditor's decision, it says, look, it's not moot, we're going to even though you've conceded, DBW have conceded that you will separate the procurement. There are still issues that are unresolved in this appeal. And that's why we are here at a final hearing. And I will say, I think that is all I need to say on the issue of mootness. It isn't moot. The issues on appeal have not been completely resolved. The evidence will show that DPW not only attempted to combine the two solicitations, which is not authorized by the two legislation, but included services that will cost the government and the people of Guam significant amounts of money, in the tens of millions, possibly hundreds. That is why it's very important. It's a violation. And it needs to be addressed and is an issue squarely before the public auditor. And we believe that until a decision from the public auditor properly interpreting 58E, DPW will not follow the law. The issue is before the public auditor. We will present evidence to show that those are violations and the violations need to be addressed in this hearing and in this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tang. Mr. Keeler, you have the floor for your opening statement on behalf of the purchasing agency.
Thank you. CoreTech has stated earlier in these proceedings that it's not protesting to protest. The government respectfully disagrees with that position. On February 8th, 2017, CoreTech filed a protest. It contained two requests. One, that price be considered evaluation, part of the evaluation for the award of contract, and two, that the Simon Sanchez High School procurement and preparation of the CCIP be considered separate and apart, have two separate RFPs. The government in its March 2nd, 2017 response to CoreTech agreed to include pricing as part of the evaluation criteria. In its March 31st, 2017 agency report, it addressed CoreTech's second issue and agreed to separate the two RFPs, restricting the very first RFP, which is the RFP that's under protest, to the reconstruction of Simon Sanchez High School and to preparation of the CCIP. Over a month later, we continue to address issues. In its issues filed for the hearing, CoreTech has created a couple new issues. One is whether DPW violated Guam law when it combined the procurements, and whether Chapter 58E authorizes the procurement of services such as insurance and maintenance for the remaining 34 schools. With regards to the first one, we consider it irrelevant. The government has already agreed to separate the two procurements. That should resolve the issue. If it doesn't resolve the issue, the rules and regulations, specifically 2GAR 3114F1 and 5GCA 501B2 or B, provide that the contracting officer has extremely broad authorization as to what contained in a procurement.
What was the procurement law you just cited? Can you do that again? I'm sorry. I got your
5GCA 5001B.
Thank you.
So, one, it's irrelevant. Two, the contracting officer has extremely broad authorization as to how to form a procurement. With regards to the second point, which is what 58E authorizes, we believe that CoreTech is simply wrong. The 58E specifically, sections 58E101C, 58E102, 58E103, all specifically provide for maintenance. Indeed, maintenance is one of the critical components of the procurement. We would concede, and maybe there's possible confusion with regards to it, the last sentence of section 58E104 reads, the contract shall require that the contractor be responsible for all costs, expenses, and fees of, I'm sorry. The sentence reads, capital maintenance costs shall be paid by the educational agency. So we're not talking maintenance, we're talking capital maintenance costs. For example, if there's a earthquake and a building is damaged, that is not a maintenance item. Further,
and Mr. Keeler, for the record, Attorney Leslie Travis is here on behalf of the appellant.
Good morning.
Thank
Thank you.
All right, please proceed, Mr. Keeler.
Okay. Finally, with regards to preparation of the program for the 58, Chapter 58E, it's government's position that CORTEC does not have standing to state what is in the document. The document has not been drafted, has not been prepared with the government's acknowledgement and acquiescence to separate the two RFPs. This item will now be part of a second procurement item. And we would note that CORTEC has essentially admitted as such in its response to the agency report, specifically page 3, lines 12 to 14. CORTEC states that, and I'm summarizing, states that it doesn't know whether it's going to object until the CCIP is completed.
Are you finished, Mr. Pitt?
Yes.
Could I just ask for a bit of clarification on the word maintenance? The schools that have been done through the COPs for the government's benefit have maintenance in that, you know, to take care of when the air conditioners break down. Some of them, like JFK, even include janitorial maintenance. You know, so in other words, ongoing, and it's my understanding those are capital maintenance as well as operational maintenance. Meaning, like in the case of JFK, it includes janitorial as well as replacements of air conditioners and other things like that. That's my understanding. So how would... how does DPW envision the terminology of maintenance? I know you're still drafting this, and I know that, you know, but I think that's part of the confusion as I read this in my mind.
Okay. Well, I think the government, DPW, would concur with the way you just described maintenance. I think maintenance has a day-to-day definition that, you know, certainly we can look at other schools and see how that's been done. But what you just described was day-to-day maintenance items. And again, when we refer to the last sentence of section I quoted, 58E104, it appears from our reading of the statute that the legislature was concerned with the sums that were designated for maintenance would also be used for capital maintenance costs. Okay. And again, what that term is not defined in it, but the way we are reading it, the way the department reads it, is that if there is a major structure that has been damaged, and again, an earthquake would be an example, where a wall collapsed, that is not day-to-day maintenance. That would be a capital construction item that would not be, that the legislature did not intend these specific funds to be used for.
I may come back to you later on that.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Keeler.
Mr. Camacho, may I make a request? I didn't realize there was a camera right with the speaker right behind, right, like, you know, but first of all, I don't have privacy. It's being recorded. I can't talk to my client.
That is correct.
My notes are being copied.
Okay, no. I think normally we have that camera a little farther back. And, if you're getting too close to the parties where you're capable of capturing conversations between a party and their attorney, that's not going to work. So I just ask you to move back. You good?
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, now that's enough. Ms. Tang, you may call your first witness.
All right. I would like to call Mr. Felix Benavente.
Mr. Benavente?
So while Mr. Benavente is getting seated, I just wanted to let you know that we've put exhibit tabs in them. May we use them now?
Do all the binders have the tabs?
Yes.
All of them?
Yes.
Okay, then you may.
Thank you. What, may we distribute them?
Yeah, you may distribute them. Please make sure Mr. Keeler has one.
That's the one that I just handed. I brought. We just need to. We'll use that.
I'll put tabs.
Why don't we use that one? And then this could be the exhibit.
And Ms. Dang, once again, with the I would prefer, and I will remind you as we go along that in your examinations of the various witnesses, when you cite to the exhibit, don't just cite to the Bates number. Cite to the actual exhibit number, Bates, whatever.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. And that's once again just to make sure we have a clear record of what the witness is reviewing.
Will do. Thank you.
Please stand and raise your right hand. State your name.
Felix E. Benavente.
And sir, do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Benavente.
Good morning.
Ms. Tang, your witness.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Benavente.
Good morning.
I'm sorry. I'm going to keep trying a bit. All right, good. Okay. So I would like to just start with a little background. I know we have extensive background on you from the last hearing, but just for the record, I'll just ask a couple of brief background questions. So, Mr. Benavente, can you just give us a brief summary of your educational background, please?
I have a bachelor's degree in. I have a bachelor's degree.
In which area?
Secondary education.
Okay. Which college did you attend?
University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire.
Okay. And do you have any experience with construction?
Yes.
What type of construction experience do you have?
Small construction, and since my time at Public Works, I've been involved in capital construction projects.
Okay, so let's talk about small construction. What do you mean by small construction?
Well,
what was your What did you do?
Well, I actually worked for a construction company as a worker. You know,
okay.
I did masonry, carpentry, most of the work that I did in that company was for upgrades, remodeling, renovations. And then I've overseen or been involved in construction of several projects at Public Works.
Okay, so if I may interrupt you,
sure.
Just before we go on to the public work projects, with respect to your work on small construction,
mm-hmm.
What time frame was this? Do you have a...
Ms. Tang, we're going into the weeds here.
Okay.
On what's supposed to be otherwise, just background information
right.
about the witness.
All right.
Please proceed.
I will, thank you. With respect to your experience at DPW,
mm-hmm.
You said you've been involved in projects. Can you describe what your involvement
Well, the most recent one was, for example, the fishing platform. We did we oversee highway construction projects, highways and bridges. By the way, I just want to add, previous to that, I was also involved in a couple of subdivision projects. So that's the type of projects.
Can you just briefly describe your role?
Well, even for all of them, because there was, you know, every construction project is a different project.
Okay, a DPW. Let's talk about the DPW projects. You've been at DPW
mm-hmm.
a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
Do you recall when you began?
Oh, yes, 2015.
Okay. So what was your role in 2015?
Well, when projects come in for example, the CIP section of Public Works, we review the work request from the using agency. We sit down and help them prepare specs, and then we put the project out for construction, and then we get involved in construction quality, which is our inspection, and close the project when it's completed, and turn it over to the user.
Okay, but if I could just get specifics, what is your role in all of this? This is what DPW does. So how do you contribute to that? What do you have a decision-making role?
In terms, I'm thinking of a lot of, there's a lot of processes in this construction project. In terms of decision making, it's pretty much institutionalized, and when the final releases are completed for release, if the director is not there, then I would sign the documents that release the project. Sometimes in the beginning, though, we sit down with the user and clarify what exactly the user wants in terms of. Because many times a user comes not with specs, so we help them put together the specs.
So, just you're the deputy director
mm-hmm.
of DPW, and that was your position 2015, correct?
Correct.
All right, and you still are the deputy director.
Yes.
And for this particular procurement on appeal, you are the chief procurement officer.
Yes.
Correct. But you are not necessarily the chief procurement officer for all DPW matters.
That's correct.
Projects.
That's correct.
That would be the director, Mr. Lombrero.
That's correct.
Right. Okay, so when you say it's institutionalized, so you have a staff who does much of the work, and when the work is, whether it's a process or review of documents, it's submitted to you, do you have any decision-making role in this procurement?
In this procurement, yes.
What is your role?
In this procurement, as set up by statute, there's the evaluation committee. We
mm-hmm.
assemble the evaluation committee set up by statute, which consists of five agencies, including Public Works.
Mm-hmm.
And we prepare the, prepare the roadmap on how to move forward. But for this particular procurement, you have to understand that this is a lot of groundwork for this procurement was already done before I got there. So the roadmap that I inherited was already prepared and moving forward. So my involvement as the procurement officer for this project was to continue moving forward with the process already laid out. The second part was to assemble the negotiation committee after the evaluation committee made its determination of who the selected highest ranking offerer was and move forward with negotiations for that.
Okay, so going to move on. You remember the November decision. Have you had a chance to review the public auditor's November decision from the last CORTEC appeal?
Yes.
All right. And do you recall when you first saw it, when it came out?
Yes, when we received it from them. That's when we first saw it, yes.
Okay. And when you received it, did you, what, if anything, did you do?
Objection.
If I may finish my question.
Go ahead. What's your objection, Mr. Keeler?
That's a prior procurement. We have before us a different procurement.
Can I finish my question?
In response to Mr.
Yeah, I'm going to ask him, what, if anything, did he do to correct in this procurement, taking that decision into consideration? Because there were numerous violations noted.
Okay,
and
well,
he testified that.
That procurement, okay, the
right.
other appeal is done. The
right.
decision's out. And that right. RFP that was a subject of that appeal isn't on the table here. I'm going to sustain the objection.
Wait.
I'm going to sustain in part, okay, and I'm going to deny in part, just going to allow you a little leeway.
Okay, and I'm not asking about the last procurement, to be very clear, last hearing or matters relating to the last procurement. All I'm saying is focusing on the order that came out, which had specific findings with respect to the last RFP. What, if anything, did you do as the chief procurement officer in preparing or revising or getting this current RFP out, this solicitation that came out on January 25th, 2017?
Okay. Well, you understand that this is not solely a public works project. We assembled the committee, the five-member committee, and discussed the decision and took the parts of the decision that we had control over, specifically the procurement record and the communications log. Public Works retained an individual to focus on making sure that the procurement record, with the assistance of the AG, is as was expected to be by law, highlighted by the OPA and the communications law. So we have addressed that part of the decision. The other part was to either to consider whether review the initial decision, I think in the evaluation part, or we solicit, the committee decided to issue a new RFP. So those were two things I remember that we actively worked on. There were other parts to that decision. One was a GITA issue, and that was taken care of by, I think it, there were other parts. I think it was a 13-part decision, and about two of them were directly the responsibility of Public Works, and that's what we did to correct that, with okay. sitting down with the five-member committee.
Can you, do you recall when this five-member committee met?
Within a week or two after the decision.
Okay. And
after we received the decision. Because there's a difference. Sometimes a decision is made, but we don't have it on paper yet.
I see. Do you remember if there was a sign-up sheet for that meeting?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So would this be the, there's a meeting referenced in the procurement record, December 13, 2016. That's not, was that the meeting that was taken, that took place in DPW?
Probably. Don't remember often.
All right. Is that when your procurement record for this appeal starts? with this solicitation, the January 2017 solicitation started.
I'm going to say yes, probably, because we have to find somebody to do it. So if a decision was made to go and do it, we still have to find somebody to do it. So it could have taken place a couple of days later.
Okay. In the course of preparing, I'll call it the January 2017 RFP, did you yourself review the enabling legislation?
Oh, yes.
And I'm referring to
121 and 120?
Yes, or 50, or Chapter 58D.
58D and E, yeah. Yes.
I think we'll call, if you don't mind, I'll refer to it as 58D and E, because as we cite to the statute, we'll refer to the sections within Chapter 58D and E to be consistent.
That's fine.
All right. So you personally reviewed it?
58D.
And E?
Yes.
Okay. Do you recall when you might have done that?
Since I got on board this project in the middle of 2015.
Okay. Did you review it at any time in December 2017, before the January 2017 RFP was issued?
I make reference to both often. So, yes.
Okay, so you recall that you did?
Yes.
Okay. During these meetings with the DPW meetings, or the...
The selection committee meeting.
I'm sorry, yes. Well, actually, I'm talking about pre-RFP time. Before the issuance of the January 2017 RFP.
That's the selection committee. DPW okay. never made any decision without the committee.
Okay. So, if I may, who is on the selection committee?
GIDA, as authorized by statute, is GIDA, Land Management, EPA, DOE, and Public Works.
Okay. Who was present for GIDA? Was it Ms. Silva?
Ms. Silva.
And for DLM?
Michael Borja.
Okay. And EPA, Mr. Palacios?
Yvette Cruz.
DOE?
At that time, Joe Sanchez.
When you say at that time, Joe Sanchez, did it change?
The previous RFP was John Fernandez, but he was no longer DOE superintendent during the discussion of the new RFP, the proposed new RFP.
Was Mr. Romero involved at all from DOE?
He would be present in some meetings. Not everybody was present at every meeting.
I understand. DPW was yourself?
Correct.
And who else, if anyone else?
John Kalanayan, Ray Rinaldo, Arlene Borja, and Clarissa Guevara, who we assign as the full-time document or project archivist.
Great. And during these meetings, was there council present?
Yes. Yeah.
And who would that be?
Tom Keeler.
Okay.
And I think Shannon also. And
Ms. Teichner?
Yes.
All right. And there would always be one or both of them at these meetings?
Yes.
All right. And what was their role in these meetings? This is pre-solicitation, pre-issuance of the solicitation.
Yes. Advice and guidance. And contribute with the discussion.
All right. Do you recall if there were any discussions regarding the types of services that are authorized under Chapter 58E, pre-solicitation?
Not specifically. It was a discussion of the RFP as a whole, very similar to the first RFP with modifications.
Were any of these modifications that were discussed, did any of the discussions focus, regarding the modifications, focus on the authorized services or procurement under 5080.
I don't remember specifically.
Okay. And if it had been discussed, would it have been noted by the archivist or the person keeping the procurement record? The minutes, if you will.
It could be. It could be, but it would be most notably... it could be.
Okay. But your recollection is it wasn't specifically raised with respect to any of the modifications for the January 2017 RFP?
No, that it was still being thought about by many people. So.
What was still being thought about by many people?
The particular modifications, the particular language of the new RFP 56 for purposes of our discussion, because the original RFP was 55. I think this is 56.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be looking at language coming from the AG's office, as well as language that our contracts people would be putting together to respond to adhere to the recommendations of the OPA in terms of making sure that the project was in line with the decision.
Okay. And so I just want to be clear that I'm talking about after the time the decision was issued, the November decision was issued, mm-hmm. 2016, and between that period and January 25th when the new RFP, 2017, when the new RFP was issued,
mm-hmm.
your recollection is that there was no specific discussion regarding the authorized services and procurements under Chapter 5080 in these communications?
I can't remember any specific details, but, you know, no, I can't.
Okay. Now, I just have a question. So you mentioned that you get comments from the AGs and then the contract people. Who are the contract people?
Ray Rinaldo and John Kalanayan.
Oh, so your staff, right?
Yes.
The DPW staff. Anyone else?
Well, Arlene Pierce, who's a member of my staff, would also comment on that. Basically, that's the DPW core
that
response to that helps me out with that.
So, does DPW or you, as a, in this case, the chief procurement officer for would be the largest single procurement for DPW, have a liaison person that you contact at the governor's office?
Eric Palacios is the governor's special liaison for education.
Okay, and so he was in this group of selection committee, correct?
Yes.
All right.
Once in a while,
Right.
When we called the committee intended to meet every week, mm-hmm. because we wanted to make sure that we kept the process moving after we got the result of the determination from the OPA. We wanted to meet every week to make sure everybody was sharing concerns as we prepared the new RFP to come out. So, but not everybody could make every meeting.
I understand. And I think your procurement record has a sign-up sheet, so it shows who showed up and who didn't.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. And I know that Mr. Palacios did show up for quite a few of them. He actually signed in for, I think.
Yeah, maybe one or two.
Yeah. Okay, so as the liaison for the governor's office, what is your understanding of his role in the selection committee?
Like every other member, he would just see how any participate in the discussion and provide guidance like everybody else would.
Excuse me if I could interrupt.
Mm-hmm.
You said he was from the governor's office. The governor's office is not a member of the selection committee. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So... was he there as an observer?
Yes.
Okay, so...
Yeah, let me clarify that. More of an observer.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So who was the EPA representative?
Yvette Cruz. Cause,
okay, that's okay. That's what I want. Okay.
The management that at EPA is Yvette Cruz is the deputy director.
Okay.
And the law did say director or deputy, right. And Yvette was the one assigned.
And just, again, for clarification, who was the representative for land management?
Michael Borja, the director.
So he continued.
Yes, yeah. Michael actually was there for every meeting.
Yeah. So unlike the first RFP, two of the members did change and with EPA and DOE.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Were there, I'm sorry, but were there any other observers or people besides Mr. Palacios from the governor's office?
No.
Okay.
No, it's, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Please proceed, Ms. Stein.
Sure, thank you. So Mr. Palacios also holds a position, correct? I think with agency? He was the EPA.
He was the original EPA rep for 55, for RFP 55.
Okay. I didn't follow his career. Is he still the director of EPA?
No. That's Yvette Cruz.
Okay, so that helps clarify. So
he's the governor's special assistant for environment and education.
I see. Okay.
Which used to be held by Vince Guerrero.
Right.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
Who was participating in the original one too?
I beg your pardon?
Vince helped put together the original.
Right. And so, Mr. Palacios, as you stated, would be giving advice, is what you said, right?
That's what I said. But it's more as an observer to see how we were proceeding.
And then he would report back to the governor.
If the governor wants to.
That your understanding?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you recall what type of guidance he provided to the selection committee?
I think I probably should not have used the word guidance. I use that a lot, but I don't know. I'm just thinking more of ways how he can help. For example, you know, sometimes I would need assistance in making sure that some the notice was out for members to show up in the meetings. And he says, okay, well, because, you know, see, the way the law was set up, it required membership to be directors or deputies. And directors or deputies have very tight schedules. So many times our meetings would be rescheduled or because we needed some more information from the other agencies, and we don't have them. So what we do is we wait for the next meeting to continue any conversation that we could not continue.
I understand, but I think my question was, what kind of guidance did he provide to the selection committee?
I don't really remember giving us any guidance other than, you know, we need to. We just need to keep working on it so we can get this RFP going.
Okay. Was there ever any discussion regarding the insurance component?
No.
With
Eric?
Yes, with Mr.
Palacios. No, he didn't discuss most of the stuff that Mr. Palacios would bring to the table would be, you know, the concern about the kids. The kids that we talked with back in the original, back a few months earlier, that when is the school going to get done? How long is it going to take? It was mostly that kind of discussion. Not too much with any details of the RFP.
Okay. With respect to... Other than Mr. Palacios, are there non-selection, any other non-selection members who participate in these meetings?
No.
Is it common to have the governor's liaison in your selection meetings as you're drafting RFP?
I don't know.
Okay,
this is the first time I've seen it.
Okay.
Ever done one.
And I'm
it's
sorry.
Probably, this is the first time I've ever done this type of RFP. And Mr. Palacios is probably involved because he was a member of the original. He was the original EPA rep.
But you had an EPA rep. So it was, I think you testified that
mm-hmm.
his role clearly was that as the liaison from the governor's office, right?
As the education liaison for the
right.
governor's office. And
okay.
his role was to advise the governor on status of education-related projects.
Okay. Let's focus on the drafts. So when you prepared before the January 2017 RFP was finalized, were there any drafts that circulated?
Yes.
Okay. To the best of your recollection, how many?
My best recollection is one, the first one.
Do you recall whether that draft was circulated, who it came from?
The first draft came from our office, our contracts people. That was a very simple draft.
And did this draft show like red line changes, or was it just a clean document?
Highlight, strike throughs.
Okay, and it was based on the last RFP template?
Yes.
Okay.
The simple ones, just strike through lines, and that was our first run.
Who was involved in preparing Ray
Junio. Ray Junio, engineer that's
okay.
in charge of contracts.
And anyone else?
It would be, well, John is his supervisor, John Kalanayan, so.
How about you?
I would receive the drafts from him, and he says, well, is this, and I said, okay, good, that's the first draft, let's run it by council and work from there.
Okay, and so that first draft was sent to council, Mr. Keeler and Ms. Titano for vetting.
I didn't send it to them. That's the normal mm-hmm. process. Our people would send it to them, but I
okay.
personally did not.
Okay. And then once it goes to them, they come back with comments, correct?
Comments with their own comments.
Right. I'm not asking about what those comments are. I'm just confirming that it came
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to your, do you recall what happened after it came back from council?
I honestly don't remember.
Did it go through another round of revisions?
I don't remember. I'm sure they did, or it was addressed, but I don't remember.
Okay. And to the best of your recollection, how many drafts were there?
There were probably two that I remember.
Two drafts.
Mm-hmm.
The first being the one that was issued by DPW to its council. To council.
No,
correct?
The first one was just the in-house strike-throughs.
Okay.
Because it was council was taking longer. We wanted to move faster. And we were talking days.
Mm-hmm.
Council would take a week or so to get together, and you know, they have their own internal review process. But we were pushing to get it out, so we just told our people, based on the determination, let's do some strike-throughs. You know, just strike what's not good, and that was our first run. But we had to wait for the AG's office to do their own formal review. And so instead of waiting for that, we did our own. But we didn't get anywhere with it because we had to run it by the AG's office for conformance, compliance, because we hadn't received their comments yet.
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand how this all happened. So there was the first RFP draft, and that was initiated by or prepared by Mr. Kalanai and Mr. Junio.
It wasn't a draft, it's just a...
Markup draft, how's yes. that? Okay, markup version.
Yes, but still needed to be reviewed by legal
right.
counsel. Yeah.
When I say draft, I'm not saying it's the done deal. I'm just saying it's a version, markup version. That version was sent, DPW markup was sent to counsel. And while it was awaiting counsel's review and comments, DPW went and prepared a second markup version.
No.
Okay, correct.
We prepared our first strike-through version.
Mm-hmm.
We understood that the AG was doing their own version or drafts based on their legal interpretation of things. We weren't lawyers, so we really were doing our strike-throughs just based on our understanding of the determination. So that was the only thing we did, just one time, the strike-throughs.
Okay.
Then we waited for the AGs to come out with the version and consider look at ours. You know, here's our simple review.
Yeah.
What do you think? So then the final came out after that.
The final came from whom?
Well, all of our reviews have to be done with all of our RFP. Let me think about that for a second. The final RFP, I think, was reviewed by the AG before we put it out.
That would probably be prudent.
Yes. I remember I was off island for about a month, too, in January when this thing was going on.
Okay.
So.
Was someone else making decisions in your absence?
Sure.
Who?
Well, the committee as a whole was
there. The selection committee?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
We would mark it up and have the commission, the selection committee would look at it at the next session.
So everybody who was present in the selection committee meeting got a copy of it or saw a copy of it?
I would think.
And if Mr. Palacio was there, he got a copy of it too. Would that be correct?
I don't know if we gave him a copy. I don't know.
Well,
You'd have to check the signing sheet because, like I said, I was gone for 4 weeks in January.
Okay. But at the very least, he saw it while he was at that meeting. These drafts.
If he was at the meeting, probably, but I don't remember if we have an RFP draft. But then again, I wasn't at that meeting, so. But that's easy to check because the sign-in sheets would be there,
mm-hmm.
and what was discussed would be there.
Our record shows that he was, I will represent to you, that and this is in DPW procurement records, pages 6, to dates number 6 to 7, December 16, 2016, Mr. Palacios from signed in as the OOG Office of the Governor, who was in attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe the first draft – do you recall at that point whether the draft had come out?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It wasn't even a draft. Like I said, it was just
– comments.
comments based on, you know, we got the AG's determination. I mean, we got the OPA's determination. We asked the AG to comment. The AG always takes a long time to put stuff together. So we said in-house to our own people, what do you think? So I said, give me what you think. And that's what he did. I said, just do a simple strike through. Then we'll sit on it and wait for the AG's official.
Okay. Well, let's move on. Do you recall at any point prior to the issuance of the January 2017 RFP, whether somebody checked it for compliance with the two enabling legislations?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Remember, I was not there.
Did you receive any communications from, other than these meetings, do you communicate with any of the other selection committee members?
No. The purpose of the weekly meetings was to make sure our communications were in front of everybody. And so any communications that we were going to make would be at those meetings.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you to look at our exhibits. It's the black binder, please. And there are, just so you know, there are four exhibits. The first exhibit is the RFP, exhibit number one. And there's a tab there. You see that in the green sheet, that's the tab. And as you recall from the last hearing, there's dates numbers in the bottom right-hand corner. And so when I have a question about a specific document, I will identify the exhibit number and the Bates number. Okay?
Okay.
All right, there are a total of four exhibits, so that should make it pretty simple. So I'm gonna focus most of my attention on the first document, which is the RFP document, Exhibit 1. All right, so please go to Exhibit 1, CT, the Bates number 122. And I'm going to direct you to, I'm sorry, not 122. It would be 104. That is 58, the beginning of Chapter 58D. So, it's your understanding that Chapter 58D is for procurement for Simon Sanchez, correct?
Correct.
And it's your understanding that this has to be treated as a separate procurement from the 58E procurement. Is that your understanding?
No.
What is your understanding?
We could proceed with 58D and E.
In one procurement, one RFP?
Yes.
Okay, what is the basis of that understanding?
The previous program put together. You remember that I came in February, in mid-2015. So the strategy was already put in place to proceed with 58D and E, as it was part of the procurement officer's wide range prerogative on how to proceed with procurement.
Okay.
According to the rules and...
Sorry.
Yes.
Can you direct me to the specific statute that gives you that power as the chief procurement officer?
No, I think the council addressed that earlier, but I forgot I did.
Okay. So, looking at, let's focus on 58D, all right, which is Exhibit 1, CT00104. You've reviewed it, I think you testified you've reviewed this numerous times since 2015, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can you show me where in this law, 58D, it says that you can include the procurement for the 34 schools, the remaining schools?
I don't see it in here.
Okay.
It's not in here.
So you're relying, so your testimony that you have the authority to combine the two solicitations, the two, is based solely on a statute that you don't recall at the moment, but you believe there's a statute. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that was the, like I said, that's the process that was put together by the original procurement team.
All right. I understand that the original procurement team may have put together that statute, I mean, that process. The process meaning combining the two, right?
Yes.
All right. But you were aware that when we protested, when CORTEC protested, this was an issue we raised, that you can't combine the two. Did you yourself investigate and review the statute and see if this was correct?
No.
So are you relying solely on some other source for your belief that you have the authority and the power to combine the two procurements?
With the guidance of the AG's office, yes.
Okay, so I'm not asking what you talked to your attorneys about. So would it be accurate to say that with advice of counsel, you believe that you have the authority to combine the two procurements, and plus the fact that it was put together by the last group that issued the last RFP?
Yes.
Process put in place?
Yes.
All right. And were you involved in the last solicitation in terms of putting together this process, combining the two RFPs? Were you involved in any of
those? I took the RFP 55. Picked it up midstream and took it to the time that it was settled by an OPA decision. That was my involvement in RFP 55.
So you had no involvement in the process prior to its issuance of the last RFP?
In preparation of the RFP, that's correct.
Okay. So I just want to be crystal clear on the basis of your belief. One, you believe you have the authority to combine the two procurement because of a statute that you believe exists in Guam law, and because two, you were advised that you could do it.
Yes.
And that advice came from counsel.
Yes.
Is there any other source for that belief other than advice of counsel?
No.
Objection, that misstates his testimony.
How so, Mr. Keeler?
He made reference to rules and regulations stating his authority as a procurement officer.
Ms. Dang, in response to the objection?
I did say that there were statutes that he referred to, but he does not know
I'm
them.
Going to... Okay, I do recall that was a little bit of his earlier part of his testimony. He didn't mention regulations, but I'm going to overrule the objection, and that's an area that you certainly can explore with Mr. Benavente on cross-examination. Okay, please proceed, Ms. Tang.
Thank you.
I'm going to cut to the chase, if I may.
All right.
Mr. Benavente, is that your belief right now, that going forward, what is your intent, for this RFP?
Going forward, we have decided to separate the procurement, so it would not be 58D and E in response to that question.
So that is your, and even though we didn't have, even though DPW and CORTEC did not come to an understanding, and that's why we're here today, it is DPW's intent to separate the two RFPs.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay, thank you. All right. I'm just curious about this authority. Other than combining RFP, do you believe you have powers to change an RFP once it's been issued?
There's a process for amending an RFP, yes.
Okay. But do you agree that you have to follow what's provided in the enabling statute, 58D and 58E? Let me restate that question. Whatever authority that you have as the chief procurement officer is limited by what is contained in the enabling statute. Do you agree?
There's enabling statutes, there's other statutes. Enabling statutes for this particular procurement?
Yes.
There's other statutes that come into play, statutes, regulations, rules. So it's a composition of all those regulations that we have. Regulations, rules, statutes, whatever we call them, we have to work within those, within that fence.
Okay, please answer my question. As the chief procurement officer, do you agree that your authority is limited, your authority to procure services and products, whatever they might be, is limited in this procurement by the enabling statutes, the two enabling statutes?
Well, it's not a yes or no answer. Yes, but also including the other existing statutes and regulations and rules.
Okay, I'm not asking about other existing statutes. I'm asking you about 58D, Chapter 58D, and Chapter 58E, mm-hmm. that tells the agency what it can procure. My question is very narrow and very specific.
Okay. Objection.
I would ask that he answer the question.
Your objection, Mr. Keeler?
He's already answered the question.
Ms. Tang?
It's not responsive.
I think it's very clear. He states that he simply doesn't agree with your thesis that 58D prohibits him from combining it with 58E. I think that's very clear from his testimony. I'm going to sustain the objection. Please move on, Ms. Tang.
So, thank you. So, Mr. Beneventi, so what you're saying is that you have authority under Guam law to procure services that are not allowed or specifically allowed under 58D and E for these procurements? Is that what you're saying?
No.
All right, let's go to 58D. This is Exhibit 1, CT-104. I'm sorry, I meant to say 1.
Five.
There's a reference to a CCIP here on paragraph, line 3, page 105. Do you see that?
Yes.
All right. That's a comprehensive capital improvement plan. What is your understanding of this CCIP?
This would be a plan that includes an assessment of the physical condition of the schools, recommendations for mitigation, prioritization, to include bus responses to those.
I'll make it easy for you. Why don't we go to CT 107? There's a definition.
Mm-hmm.
So you agree with that definition? I wasn't trying to.
Well, I think that's where I got it.
Yeah, okay. So it's on subsection 58D103B, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what is your understanding of a program study? You've heard that term, correct?
Yes.
And that's referenced in 58, chapter 58E.
Yes.
All right. So what is your understanding of what a program study is?
I think program study is defined in there too, isn't it?
To look at 58E is on page 23.
It's not defined.
I'm sorry.
I was just, he said it was defined in 58D, so I gave him an opportunity to look at that if you want.
Or maybe was it E? I think I said E.
It's on, turn to page 127.
Yeah. So it's in 58E, correct? Not 58D.
Yes.
Right. So what is your understanding of what a program study is?
Pretty much the same as CCIP.
Okay. But it is not the Army Corps of Engineer document that's referenced in CT 1, Exhibit 1, CT Bates number 127, line 11.
Page what again?
120, CT 127, line 11. They're not the same document, are they?
The program study?
Yeah.
Is not the same document as what?
As the DOI, Army Corps of Engineer report.
Not exactly, but it addresses the same issues. Status of building structures, roofing, electrical, mechanical, that kind of issue.
Have you read the report? The Army
yes,
Corps
I have.
How many pages is it for one?
Two or three.
Right. So it's a very brief summary. It has a couple of pie chart, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So would you issue a $100 million or $50 million RFP based on that three-page report?
No.
Okay. Do you think
it's part of the resource material to be used in putting together the program study and then would be eventually comprise in large part the capital improvement plan?
Right. But the program study is not the same as the capital improvement plan. So what you've just described is...
Pretty much it is.
Let me finish. What you just described... Starting point is the Army Corps of Engineer report, a program study, and then the CCIP. Is that what you're saying? That's just what you testified to.
It would be a cumulative of a lot of that information plus other upgrades, because since the engineer report came out, for example, Antalan has been completely fixed, so it would not necessarily be touched in that program study. No, not in program study, but in the CCIP.
Have you had other program studies performed at DPW for any other government property?
Not that I know of.
Okay. So what was your understanding of what this program study entailed?
Well, just what's generally described in the CCIP.
Okay.
Using the using as background the Corps of Engineers and the program study description in 58E.
Is it also your understanding that until the program study is completed, at least under 58E, all right, it had to be completed before an RFP can be issued for 58E? Is that your understanding of the law?
Say that again, please.
Okay. Is it your understanding that Chapter 58E requires the procuring agency, DPW, to complete a program study before it could issue an RFP?
No.
Okay. Let me direct you to Exhibit 1, page CT. You're on that page. Okay. So I'd like you to read lines 9 to 14, please.
I'm sorry, Ms. Tang, what page again?
I'm sorry, Exhibit 1, CT 127. It's the same page as the actual document.
Okay. Ms. Tang, we don't need him to read half a paragraph to the record.
He can read it to himself.
Okay.
All right.
9 to what?
I'm sorry, 9 to...
17?
To 17, yeah. Statute Section 58E103, the law mandates that a program study listing all of the projects that need to be completed, prioritizing the projects, be completed first, correct?
That's what it says.
And then the list of projects, it's line 13, shall be included in an RFP. Once the program study is completed, the superintendent of education shall solicit the RFP through the Department of Public Works. So do you agree with me that this section, 58E103, requires a program study to be completed before, and that the list of projects that would be prioritized under such program study be the basis for an RFP? That RFP could not issue until that is completed. Isn't that what this law says?
That's what it says.
Okay. And you disagree?
The procurement team that put the RFP together used the, from what I understand, the broad powers of the procurement official, Public Works, to solicit for both projects at the same time.
Okay, let's go to page 128, the next page. You can read to yourself lines 6 to 8.
Yes.
Okay. It says here you have to, the RFP issues 30 days, shall be issued 30 days after you receive the program study, right?
Yes.
Okay, so do you agree that DPW has to get the program study 30 days. At least can't issue the RFP until 30 days after, shall be issued, I'm sorry, within 30 days after receiving the program study.
Well, that RFP has not been issued.
That's not my question, Mr. Benedict. I'm just specifically asking about your understanding of the statute.
Yes, that's what it says.
Okay. And do you believe that as a chief procurement officer that your broad powers allow you to circumvent and ignore 58103?
No.
E103, excuse me.
We're not doing that. That's not what we're doing.
Let me ask you my question again. Make sure that we're answering the question. Is it your understanding that your supposed powers and authority as the chief procurement officer allows you to ignore the requirements of 58E103?
Objection.
Mr. Keeler?
He just answered the question.
Ms. Ting?
He says that's not what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm a little confused.
His first word was no, and then he explained.
I'm a little confused on the answer. I'm going to allow Ms. Tang to proceed with the question. Please answer it, Mr. Benevente, to the best of your ability. Objection overruled. Please proceed. We're waiting on your answer, Mr. Benevente.
Oh. The question was, do I agree?
Could you repeat the question, Ms. Tang?
Okay. Right. Mr. Benevente, your authority, is it your understanding that your authority as a chief procurement officer allows you to ignore the requirements of 58E103.
No, it does not.
Okay. Focusing on 58E, which starts at page 122 and 23. What is your understanding with respect to the authority of the procurement officer or the agency to procure insurance for the 34 schools? I'm referring specifically to Chapter 58E.
Honestly, I don't really know about the insurance requirements. I do know that there's insurance for construction.
Having reviewed this enabling legislation, 58E, is there anywhere in this enabling legislation that says a procuring agency can go out and get insurance, not construction, I'm not talking about a construction, insurance for the facilities for 34 schools?
CT 129, line 14.
Okay. I direct you to the same page, line 7. It says, the construction contract shall contain contractual obligations typically found in government law and construction contracts, which is the introduction to that section you just cited. So I think I specifically, in my question...
I'm sorry, you kind of lost me there, mistake. Where? What page are you on?
I'm on 129, the same page he's on. So just to recap, I asked him, except for construction contracts, is there any, is there any provision in 58E which allows the procuring agency to solicit insurance, such as property damage and earthquake, typhoon, for the 34 schools for 30 years? And he directed me to page 129, line 14. And then in response, I directed him All right. So, Mr. Beneventi, you agree with me that the insurance reference in line 14 is limited to construction contract insurance?
Yes.
All right. So do you agree that nothing in 58E allows the procuring agency to solicit insurance for those 34 schools for 30 years?
That's correct.
Let's talk about maintenance, all right? Directing your attention to the same statute, but we're going to go to page 133, but it starts at 132. Read the complete section. Exhibit 1, CT 132, continuing on 133. And the section of the statute I'm referring to is 58E 109. Please take a moment to review. Do you agree that, have you completed your review? Is it your understanding that section 58E 109 specifically carved out the maintenance and repair and exterior groundskeeping and landscaping and upkeep of the educational facility from the procurement? Or stated in another way, that would be the responsibility of DOE or the school going forward?
Well, that's what it says here.
But is that your understanding as well?
Maintenance and repair and exterior groundskeeping and landscaping.
Let me make it easier for you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to direct you to Exhibit 1, page 114, CT 114. But keep your finger on 133. So we're going to go back and forth between those two pages, 114 and 133. Are you there?
Yes.
All right. So focusing your attention on line 14 to 23, but I'm really going to focus on the last part of that paragraph, 58D 111. It's the maintenance fund. You see that?
Yes.
All right. You want to take a moment to review section 58D 111 on page CT 114.
Okay.
All right, so for Simon Sanchez, under Section 58D-111, there's a maintenance fund, correct?
Yes.
And under the contract that's referenced in Section 58D-111 is the contract that the contractor or slash developer offerer or awardee would be signing with the government, correct?
Yes.
And under the terms of that contract, the awardee is required to maintain Simon Sanchez as part of its contract, correct?
Yes.
And that it would be funded from, in this case, the bond money, that $100 million bond money, the maintenance of the school.
Is it a bond? I don't think it's a bond.
Or a financing source.
It's not a bond money, so.
All right. The funds that are raised as a result by the awardee for this project. Is that your understanding?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please. Yes, yes or no, please?
Yes.
All right. Now, do you agree that also this includes capital, the coverage for this maintenance, all right? And this is on line 20.
Mm-hmm.
Capital maintenance with respect to equipment, on-site utilities, including collateral equipment, on-site utilities, off-site utilities, X roads, and other similar improvements need not be performed by the contractor. But they provide capital maintenance.
Okay. Ms. Tang,
yeah.
On that note, what we're going to do is we are going to take a brief 10-minute break. Mr. Benavente, I ask that you not discuss your testimony with any of the parties during the break. And you may leave the stand during the break as well. And we will reconvene in 10 minutes off the record at 10:51.
It is 10:58 a.m., and we're continuing the formal hearing of OPA PA 17-001, Cortic International Corp. versus DPW.
Yeah, before we got off the record, we were in the direct testimony of Mr. Felix Benavente. And Mr. Benavente, just to remind you, you're still under oath. And Ms. Tang, your witness.
All right, thank you. So just to refresh your recollection, because I know we went off the record, I had you look at CT 133 and CT 114, Exhibit 1. I think we left some tabs if you wanted to put it there and keep you. Okay, so my question to you is this. Focusing on Exhibit 133, CT 133, which is Chapter 58E, right?
Yes.
All right. There is no, this 58E does not include a similar contractual provision requiring the awardee to include in its contract the cost of maintenance, correct?
Your question was all maintenance?
Okay. My question was, I'm referring to page CT 133.
Yes.
The citation is 58E109 section, right? My question was, section 58E109 does not contain a similar contractual provision requiring the awardee to provide maintenance to the schools, 34 schools.
Look, you're correct. It's not the same language.
Okay.
But there is that section at the discretion of the education agency in 58D111.
Right. But I'm not asking about 58D. I'm asking about 58E. You agree?
It says all
maintenance. There's no contractual obligation on the ORD's part, correct? You answered it. Audible answer, please.
That there's no contractual obligation to include maintenance? I'm sorry. Could you just repeat
that? All right, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you like some water or something?
No, I just had some. Thank you.
All right. There's no similar contractual provision contained in 58E109, which authorizes the agency to include maintenance in the contract for the 34 schools.
That's what the language says, yes.
Okay. Now,
just for clarification, if I may, because that was the similar question that I had when Mr. Keeler had his opening statement on that issue of, quote, capital maintenance versus
yes.
operating maintenance.
Yes.
Yes. So, in reading this, what is your general understanding of the word maintenance?
Well,
because it doesn't say capital, it just says maintenance, and that's a very broad definition.
Yeah. And honestly, we probably would need to look at that, and the interpretation could be that, you know, it's broad enough to for us to differentiate between capital and your day-to-day janitorial type maintenance, that there is a difference.
And so that's something that to be considered in the development of the future RFP.
That's correct. At, or in the contract.
Or in the contract.
May
or task order.
Okay. May I follow up on that question, please? So, Mr. Beneventi, just directing your attention to Exhibit 1, CT-133, right? I think you're at, you may be on that page, right?
Yes, I am.
All right. So, I'm looking at line 1 and 2. Actually, it starts with the previous section. It says, the education agent shall be responsible for the connection of payment of all utilities. It goes on to say, page line 2 on page 133, all maintenance and repair. Is that pretty clear? All maintenance?
And repair.
And exterior groundskeeping and landscaping. So, for the upkeep of the education facility. So, all maintenance should include capital or operational maintenance. Do you agree?
Could include all that, yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to same exhibit 1. I'm going to the RFP, which begins on this is CT1. All right. Section 2.0 of the RFP, Exhibit 1, CT-007. Before I ask you questions about the RFP, I have a question about the statute, and I was I checked it during the break, and I just want to make sure we're talking about the same statute. It's called 5GCA 5113. The heading is authority of the chief procurement officer and director of public works. Is that the statute you're referring to that gives you the power to or discretion?
Where
oh, I'm
is
sorry,
that
I'm not referring to the RFP.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I should be clear. Before I...
Could you repeat that citation?
Sure. 5GCA, I think it's sub chapter B. I have to go to the... Yeah, sub article B, And the section is 5113. The heading is Authority of the Chief Procurement Officer and the Director of Public Works. Is that, do you recall that's the section that you were referring to or relying on for your authority with respect to the RFP?
In large part, yes. That's
okay. That's the correct section. And I'm looking at the section. I recognize that you don't have a copy of the statute in front of me, but I'm happy to read it to you. It's quite short. There are two main parts. Well, actually, B is the, it gives you the power. So I'll read subsection B, as in boy. The power to update, adopt operational procedures consistent with the provisions of this chapter. The Chief Procurement Officer and the Director of Public Works may adopt operational procedures governing the internal functions of their procurement operations. And then it goes out, the next section has to do with duties. So is subsection B, the section that you're relying on as your authority, for example, to combine the two procurements?
It's probably the authority that was followed by the original procurement team when this procurement was put together.
Okay. And is that...
I would rely on what the previous team put together as the basis of where we are now.
I see. Sitting here as the Chief Procurement Officer and the Deputy Director, acting, I guess, Director, if you will.
No, Director's here.
Oh, Director's here, okay. Do you agree that Section 5113, 5GCA, Subchapter B, 5113, Section B, authorizes you, gives you the power as the Chief Procurement Officer to combine the two RFPs?
That's the original procurement team used that probably as the basis for putting this RFP together.
But do you agree that subsection B of 5113 gives you the chief procurement, sitting here today as the chief procurement officer for this procurement,
I have no reason
to combine the two?
I have no reason to disagree.
I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I didn't misunderstand your answer. You have no reason to disagree with me or you, okay. Do you have the power, yes or no, to combine the two procurements under Section B of 5113?
The procurement officer at the time that this was put together interpreted that that was the case with the advice of counsel and proceeded.
Okay, so you agree with the advice of counsel and the previous group that put the procurement together?
Yes.
That's what you're saying. Okay, I got it.
We did say on the record, though, that going forward on this one, just to repeat what you said, you are planning to separate.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
In the interest of.
Okay, and one more question, 5113 subsection B. The authority that's provided in that section, the same section that we talked about, your operational powers. Do you believe, or is it your understanding that subsection, 5113 subsection B authorizes you as the chief procurement officer for this procurement, for any procurement, of 58, involving Chapter 58E, to procure insurance for the 34 schools for 30 years.
That was the approach, and there is nothing that we have in front of us right now to disagree with that approach. So I would agree, yes.
So you're authorized to do so?
Yes.
That's your position?
But there will be final... final reviews. We would still be going through counsel to clarify things. So that's the typical part of this procurement process.
Okay. But nothing in that you've seen up to this moment change your understanding that you have the power under Section B to procure insurance for 34 schools for 30 years under 58E, right?
Ms. Tang, I think he's already answered those questions. Can we please move on?
Okay.
This is a ground we've already
covered. With respect to maintenance, same question. Do you have the authority under subsection B, 5113, to procure maintenance services for the 34 schools under Chapter 58E?
Again, I state that was the process, the roadmap, so to speak, chosen by the procurement team, and there's nothing that would preclude me from staying in that same path.
Okay.
And with the advice of and guidance of counsel, we see no reason to change.
Okay. And do you think that with the that just having gone over 58E with you,
mm-hmm.
right, do you think that you can ignore it because you have advice of counsel?
We would have to seek advice of counsel. I would have to rely on counsel advice for.
Okay. You don't have any duties as the chief procurement officer to think through the issue? I mean, the law says what it says. You have to follow the law.
Objection.
Yes, Mr. Keeler.
He's answered the question any number of times.
Ms. Tang?
I'll move on.
Yes, please.
All
objection
right.
Sustained.
Okay. Now, let's look at the RFP. The current RFP contemplates the issuance of task orders, correct?
Correct.
And the first task order would be for Simon Sanchez?
Yes.
The second task order would be for one or more of the remaining
CCIP.
Four schools?
CCIP.
CCIP. Okay. Yes. And the current RFP then would also issue subsequent task orders for the 34 schools, or some of the 34 schools?
Yes.
All right. And having reviewed 58E?
Yes.
All right. And because you've agreed that DPW will be issuing a separate RFP for 58E, no such task orders should be for the 34 schools should be issued in this procurement going forward.
If we were to start with our agreements as presented, the stipulated agreement that we put together.
I don't think there's any stipulated agreement. There was a
discussion. As we put together.
Right.
We didn't say it was agreed to.
Yeah.
But if we move forward with our two concessions, yes.
Okay.
Because there would be no CCIP.
I beg your pardon.
Well, we could not proceed with any school because there's no CCIP in place.
Okay. We agree. Do you believe, is your understanding that the funding for 58D is controlled by what's allowed under 58D, the source of funding?
I have no reason to think otherwise.
Okay. And So I'm going to direct you to a page, and I'm going to ask you what your understanding of it is. It's Exhibit 1, CT 21. Section, directing your attention to section subsection 4.2.1.8.
What do you call it? What section?
Page 21, 4.2.1.8. Says the awardee must be able to provide capital maintenance for any of the schools leased as a result of this RFP. Funding shall be by annual legislative appropriation. Do you see that?
Yes.
All right. So my question to you is this. What is your understanding of this sentence here? Funding shall be by annual legislative appropriation.
Usually the expenditure of public funds have to be approved by the legislature. That's
okay.
The usual case.
So this would not come out of the, for this 58, for this procurement, the January 2017 procurement, it wouldn't come out of the 100 million, right? It would be something on top of the 100 million by a separate legislative appropriation.
No, from what I understand, even if the money's there to spend public money, you still need the authority of the legislature.
Okay, I'm sorry, that's not my question. This January 2017 RFP has a limit of 100 million, right?
That's our cap that we've
right.
chosen, yes.
Okay. And that money was supposed to be used for this procurement, the January 2017 procurement, correct? The services and whatnot.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah, within that cap.
But we're looking at 4.2.1.8. And I'm directing you to the last sentence where it says funding shall be by annual legislative appropriation. So was it intended by the agency to procure additional money on top of the 100 million?
No.
So what funding are you referring to here?
I bring back that point that I made, that it probably meant legislative approval to expend the funds, but...
It says funding shall be made.
I see what it says.
But. Yeah. But do you agree with me that before you award a contract for services, here maintenance, that you have to identify the funding? Isn't that like a basic tenet of procurement?
Well, that would have to be something that's worked out by GEDA. We really don't participate that much in the funding or the financing of this project. That would have to, how that's expended, how that's accessed, how that's approved.
Okay.
We would have to run that by GEDA.
No, I'm just asking a very simple.
I understand.
Chief Procurement Officer,
mm-hmm.
procurement. We're procuring
mm-hmm.
something. We're procuring a car. So
yes.
Before you can even issue the RFP, you have to identify the source of funds, right?
It's identified in the legislation.
Right. Okay, we're talking about car. So you can't award it and then say we're going to identify the funds, right? That's not right. Can't do that.
It's a three-person team, DOE, Public Works, and GEDA, and GEDA would advise us on how to proceed with that answer.
You are sitting here as the Chief Procurement Officer.
Yes.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
Objection.
Hang
on. Mr. Keeler?
This is a future RFP. It's a future contract. It doesn't exist.
Ms. Tang?
I don't think we're going to... I mean, I don't want to go over the same arguments. The issue is before the public auditor, all right? He wants to call it future. It's still an issue we've raised. And it's a violation of a current procurement that's on appeal. We have the right to look into these issues. And
but
obtain evidence.
I think this witness has already answered, and I think some of your line of questioning is getting a little more argumentative versus probative. I'm going to sustain the objection on that ground. Please proceed.
All right. Likewise, section 4.2.1.9. You see that?
Yes.
This is the insurance for fire, earthquake, vandalism insurance for any of the schools, right? So that could be any of the 34 schools. At least that's it's written here in this RFP.
Yes.
And of course, same thing. Funding is on top of the $100 million, right? Audible answer, please.
You said funding is on top of the RFP?
$100 million. Because it says funding shall be by annual legislative appropriation. So it's not, it's on it's funding from for this will be on top of the $100 million. That's authorized. Yes or no?
Well, you keep saying on top of the $100 million.
In addition
I don't see that.
In addition to.
Well, I don't see that either.
So are you able to identify, are you telling me that this funding here, funding shall be by annual legislative appropriation, is the same funding that we're talking about in $100 million in this RFP? Is that what you're trying to say?
I would have to defer to Gita and their finance people on how this is going to be interpreted.
So on the chief, as a chief procurement officer, you have no position on this?
It's a three-part procurement team, and DOE, Public Works, and GEDA. So their specialties come to the table when this is clarified, for this to be clarified.
Do you have a position?
No.
Going to page 23 of the RFP, Exhibit 1, Section 4.2.4.3 at the very bottom. Okay, and it continues on the next page. Says here that you as the chief procurement, that additional requirements may be imposed and are negotiated that are not specifically identified in this IRP.
I see it.
Are you aware of any services or additional requirements that are not identified?
No, not at this time. But that's from a public works perspective. We could have DOE or GEDA come up with some, but I don't know what they would be.
Okay. Do you include, would you include under section 4.2.4.3 capital maintenance?
I don't know.
For under 58E?
I don't know.
How about insurance for the 34 schools?
I don't know.
Under 58E. All right, let's go to page CT24, next page. You are aware under Guam law and also in the enabling statutes that liquidated damages need to be assessed as part of the contract, as a provision, right?
Yes, that is
all right. And my question is, under the last RFP that was appealed, there was a section 4.3.4, which provided for liquidated damages. It was deleted from this RFP. I'm going to show it to you.
Ms. Kang, the prior RFP is not that issue here.
In case he has questions
no,
about
what's your offer of proof in terms of going on to what 4.3.4 in the prior RFP said?
Compliance with 58E. Compliance.
Okay,
the
but
law
that,
requires okay, liquidated I mean, damages. They okay. deleted it from this RFP.
And
why?
It's not part of it. So you can ask, generally speaking,
okay.
If you think there's some inconsistency, go ahead. But right. Please don't refer to the prior.
All right, no problem.
I object.
To what?
It is not related to any of the issues that's in the protest or on appeal or is stated for their issues on appeal.
Okay, but she's talking about some requirement in 58E concerning this particular section, but I'm going to limit her questions to this RFP.
All right.
And not the prior one. Please proceed.
All right. So, Mr. Benaventi. Thank you. Mr. Benaventi, 58E requires the imposition of liquidated damages, correct? If the contractor defaults. And if you like, I can be the director to that. So my question is, there used to be a second, comparing the two RFPs.
I've already made a ruling. Ms. Tang, please proceed without mentioning the other RFP.
Okay, are you familiar with liquidated damages provisions?
Yes.
And that would be imposed if there's a breach, correct? Failure to complete the work.
Whatever it is that's stated in the contract,
right,
for it to kick in, yes.
You recall when you were marking up, when your team or the group were marking up this RFP, this draft, do you recall seeing a deletion of a liquidated damages provision under section 4.3.4?
Honestly, no.
Okay. Do you recall any discussions regarding the deletion of a section regarding liquidated damages?
No.
Okay. Do you agree that it should be deleted?
I don't know. It could be in one of those meetings that I was not present for.
Okay.
So I personally don't know.
All right. But you agree that liquidated damages protects the government, right?
Yes.
All right. And is required by law?
Yes.
All right. And in a RFP, it should set out what the terms of the liquidated damages, whether it's $1,000 a day, a percent, whatever the amount is, correct?
I don't know if it necessarily needs to be in the RFP, but it could be in the contract or any other documents other than the RFP.
Are you saying that that's going to be an issue for negotiation?
I don't know.
Okay, if it's on the RFP, then how does it end up in the contract?
I don't know. All I can say is sometimes some of the details are more clarified in a contract.
Right, but as a proposer.
But it could be many contracts too.
As a proposer.
Yes.
In these construction RFPs or ITBs, it should say liquidated damages will be $1,000 per day, $1,500 per day, 1%, or whatever the formula is. There is a formula. There's
yes.
a number, correct?
Yes.
All right. There is no such number for liquidated damages in this RFP. Do you agree?
It could be in statute and may not be necessary to include in the RFP.
Okay, which statute would that be?
I don't know, but...
Sitting here today, you don't know.
but I am familiar that there is a number in statute or regulation or rule that identifies the amount that can be put in place for liquidated damages.
Okay. You're absolutely sure about that?
I'm sure that there's a number somewhere, yes, in code or statute, if there's a difference.
Okay. But you don't know what that is?
I think he's already answered that question. He's saying, please move on.
All right. No further questions at this time. Wait. Hold on just a moment. Okay.
You don't have any further questions?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Mr. Keeler, your witness.
Mr. Benavente, could you please take a look at the same documents, exhibits you're looking at now. Could you take a look at CT, page 19?
Okay.
Is it correct that all work that's contemplated under this particular RFP would be issued via task order?
Yes.
Okay, could you please take a look at section 4.1 and subsection B? And does that recite that all task orders are going to be required to have a liquidated damages provision?
Yes.
Therefore, do you think you're complying with Guam's law for liquidated damages?
Yes.
Do you have an understanding as to how many task orders were contemplated under the current RFP?
Under the current RFP, well, there's the school, the CCIP, and the other schools, but that the third one would be not.
Does current RFP have a cap on the project?
$100 million, yes.
Okay. Is that funding anticipated to complete all projects for both 58D and 58E?
No.
Okay. So after completion of the reconstruction of Simon Sanchez High School and the issuance of a CCIP, do you have any idea as to what the balance of those funds could be used for?
Well, there would be for the other schools, particularly, yeah.
Okay, there's a cap. Has the Department of Education made any indication as to how they think those funds would be used?
Well, in discussions, the education representatives have brought up that possibly GW would be included as the first recipient of any projects in the upgrade phase.
Okay, and so is it correct to say that the Department of Education has indicated that it believes that George Washington will be the next priority?
That's correct.
Okay, and has the Department of Education indicated how much funding will be needed for George Washington?
In conversations, possibly the balance of the amount in the original RFP.
Okay, so under the current RFP, is it correct to state that only George Washington of the remaining 34 public schools is reasonably contemplated to be using funds under the current RFP?
Yes.
And why was it included? Why was the contemplation of George Washington repairs included in the current RFP?
Because the discussions with the representative indicated that.
Okay. Was it out of a concern with time?
Yes.
And an urgency?
Yes.
Okay, so is it correct to state that the current RFP was not intended to address task orders for the remaining 33 public schools?
That's correct.
And is it correct to state that DPW and the committee selection committee had always contemplated issuance of a second RFP?
Yes.
And that would have only been issued after completion of a CCIP, correct?
That's correct.
There had been discussions concerning the five-member selection committee. Okay.
Okay.
And Mr. Palacios' role in that. Do you recall if at any time Mr. Palacios voted on anything in the committee?
No. I mean, I do recall, and the answer is no.
Okay, so he did not, he may have made comments, he did not actively participate in any votes.
No, and his comments were very few of any, more just an observer kind of presence.
Okay, and the governor's concern, he was representing the governor, correct?
Correct, the governor's office, yes.
And is it fair to say that this being the largest procurement and the ongoing delays that the governor just wanted to make sure or monitor progress with the RFP?
That's correct.
Do you think that's reasonable?
Yes.
On direct, you had stated that DPW was rushing to get the RFP out.
Yes.
What was the urgency?
Part of it was a statement by the OPA at the last hearing that rung in my head that with a procurement this big, the largest in public works history probably, shouldn't there be all hands on deck approach? And that was in large part my guidance in trying to make the process correct and moving it forward as expeditiously as possible.
As DPW has agreed to issue separate RFPs, the first RFP is going to be controlled exclusively by Chapter D, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Could you please take a look at Exhibit CT-107 and 108. Those are the definitions for the legislation. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what page are you on?
That would be CT-107 and 108.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Benavente, in taking a look at those two pages, do you see any definition for program study?
No.
Okay. So if you're restricted to 58D for the first procurement, is program study going to be a part of it?
Program study, no.
On your direct, it wasn't quite clear to me. Do you view the program study that's discussed in 58E and the CCIP that's discussed in 58D as the same document or separate documents?
There would be separate documents. 58D calls for CCIP, but...
Okay. If you take a look at the section that I'd referenced, or page CT107, subparagraph B, defines comprehensive capital improvement plan, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and that defines what is to be included in the CCIP, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and if you look at page CT105, the first full sentence at the top reads, "It should be noted that it is critical for the Guam Department of Education to develop a comprehensive capital improvement plan to provide a roadmap for prioritizing facility improvements beyond Simon Sanchez."
I see that, yes.
Okay. And isn't the purpose of the program study to develop a roadmap for prioritizing facility improvements?
Yes.
So that can't they be read as the same type of document?
Yes.
Okay. If you take a look at CT 125, now moving to the legislation for 58E and Guam's remaining public schools. Okay. This is the definitions page for that section, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And is CCIP once again defined in the definitions?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a definition for program study?
No.
Okay. Is it possible that there was some misdrafting of the finalized legislation?
For speculation. How would he know what the drafter of the legislature was thinking? Lack of foundation.
Both legislations reference a CCIP, preparation of a CCIP, and then in the middle of it, it references a program study that's not defined.
I'm going to overrule the objection. I'm going to, you can argue what weight we should give this part of the testimony to opposing this point.
But okay. But I would also object on the basis of foundation. What's the basis of his knowledge?
Well, I don't know what his answer is going to be, but I'm going to sustain the objection in part that whatever answer he gives, please inquire as to what the basis of his belief is. Please proceed, Mr. Keeler.
Okay. Is program study defined in 58E?
No.
If you look at CT 128, lines 6 to 8, which you testified to on direct, that states the RFP shall be issued within 30 days after receipt of the program study for the design, renovation, rehabilitation, construction, or maintenance of the educational facility. Okay. Now, if the CCIP and the program study are considered separate documents, is DPW able to prepare a CCIP, have it distributed, and then be able to issue an RFP within 30 days of the program study?
No.
Now, on your direct, you also testified that maintenance was not to be included in the RFP for Chapter 58E. Is that correct? See, just yes or no, or you don't recall?
I don't recall.
Okay. I would direct you to page CT125. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, if you could please go to CT132.
Okay.
On direct, you were directed to 58, and it's at the bottom, line 26, 58E109, entitled Utilities, Maintenance, and Repair, correct?
Yes.
And that section states that the education agency shall be responsible for a variety of costs, including all maintenance and repair, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Could you now go to 58E101, subparagraph C.
Okay.
Under that section, and that's entitled contractor, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in the second sentence of that section, it states a contractor may cooperate with another entity and entities in any manner the contractor deems appropriate to provide for financing, design, renovation, rehabilitation, construction, or maintenance of the public school facilities.
I see it, yes.
Okay, isn't it correct that that section, that sentence, tends to contradict the other language we had just referenced?
Yes.
Okay. This tends to state that maintenance will be part of the program, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And it states school facilities, so it's not limiting it to one. It's referencing a number of schools, correct?
Correct.
Okay, if you please go to 58E102, which starts on the next page.
Okay.
And if you go to the top of page, that section continues on to the top of CT127. Starting from the prior page, it states contractor as may be reasonably necessary to amortize over the lease back period the costs associated with the design, renovation, rehabilitation, construction, or maintenance of the education facility.
What page was that, Mr. Peter? I'm sorry.
That would be starting on pages 126 and continuing to 127.
Okay, thank you.
Isn't it correct to state, Mr. Benavente, that this section also references the need for maintenance services?
Yes.
Okay. The next section, I would have you go to CT128. The last paragraph of that section states the RFP shall be issued within 30 days after the receipt of the program study for the design, renovation, rehabilitation, construction, or maintenance of the facility. Once again, that references maintenance as part of the program, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and once again, that would tend to conflict with the other provision at the tail end of the public law, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Keelis?
Yes.
All right, we're going to break for lunch. We're going to have the parties come back here at 1:30. Mm-hmm. Is that all right? And we will then proceed with your cross-examination of Mr. Benavente. Mr. Benavente, once again, I'm going to ask you not to discuss your testimony with any of the parties because you're still testifying when you come back. All right? Are there any other issues you need to take up at this time?
Yes, sir. If I may inquire, just for scheduling purposes, does Mr. Keeler intend to call any of the witnesses after Mr. Benavente?
Well, it's still your case in chief. Were you saying that Mr. Benavente is your only witness?
I may have rebuttal, but not in case in chief.
Okay. Mr. Keeler, were you planning on calling any witnesses during your case in chief?
Yes.
Okay, so he does, right? Okay. That's why we've reserved.
Can I ask who?
So you can ask him that after.
No, I mean, if it's going to be my client, we're just trying to, because I know he listed my client.
Were you planning on calling Mr. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going off the record. It is approximately 11:55.
Thank you.